They can be a great people color if they wish to be. They only lack the light to show the way. For this reason, above all this reason, their capacity for good. I have sent them you. My only son.
My spider senses are starting to tingle.
Just hang on to your lariat.
Wonder what kind of a scene I'm getting into.
And welcome to issue 42 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that was hiding in the barn the whole time. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
I have nothing. I'm your other host, Dave McVeigh. How are you? My other host? What? Your other co-host, Dave McVeigh. How are you, Richard? Long time no see.
What you do in your personal time is fine.
Well, that's our interesting new little theme.
Yes, that was something we've been working on back in the labs, and we hope it sticks. We wanted to give you something that said, we're here, we're...
Don't go there. I think it's a continual work in progress, and we'll keep adding things as you find new clips.
Clips, yeah, look, you know, and every week there's a vintage clip of the week, and my soundboard gets bigger and bigger each time. So heard some of our favorites in there.
It's been a month. Well, actually, it's been about 6 weeks, actually, because the monthly thing took over a little bit early, but we're here. And we've read something.
Yes.
And actually, we've read a lot.
We've read lots of things, and we'll get to that in a minute. But in this issue, we're going to catch up on what we've been reading and watching, more importantly.
Yes.
Including the new seasons of The Walking Dead and Arrow. We also look at the big announcements from New York Comic Con, and what's DC cancelling now? you said something about an Iron Man 3 trailer? Plus, X-Men Days of Future Past loses a director, and S.H.I.E.L.D. casts somebody else. Well, two extra people, actually. Plus our kick-ass pick of the week, Batman The Dark Knight Returns.
Which turns, is a request turns. As well.
It was a request. So. We mentioned this at the end of the last show. So one of our first requests.
It was actually one of the ones we planned to do anyway, but the request kind of kicked our asses into gear and said, do it.
We should probably read this again.
Absolutely. Yeah. And let me tell you, I haven't read it in quite a long time, and there's been a movie I believe you've seen as well.
Yes.
So
another one of our impetuses was doing this again.
So there's been a movie as well. And so it made us both go back and reread this after a long period of time. And it'll be interesting to see if it's still the masterpiece that we all thought it was, or whether there were problems, or, you know, we'll actually have a look at it in depth in our read at the end. So,
but in a moment, of course, David, because first, as always, it's our vintage, it surfs up, David, for our vintage clip of the week.
And so the showdown approaches as Batman and Dick Grayson rendezvous at Gotham Point.
Leave your board outside the Hang Five and follow me in. But play it cool.
Yes, the surf at Barracuda Bay has killed many a braver man than I. Why, even the ripples peak at 50 feet. I remember once when I was shooting the Curl. Just as this hot coma was breaking, I cut into the tunnel, grabbed the rail, and rode into a side slip. Who let him out?
Batman, that's what I've been trying to tell you, Joker.
Batman?
That's right, Joker. And challenging you to the surfing title. The Gotham Point World Championships.
It's too late, Batman. The entries are closed.
Correction, sir.
Correction? You dare correct me, you immature mollusk?
I'm millionaire Bruce Wayne's youthful ward, Dick Grayson. Mr. Wayne's president of the Gotham Point Surfing Association. In this case, I can speak for him. So many of the competitors have dropped out in awe of your highly touted talents. There'd be no surfing contest without Batman.
Good. Let's not have one. Just declare me the winner.
Sorry, Joker, it isn't that simple. I'm entering Batman in the surfing championships.
Shall we go into the men's locker room and put on our baggies?
Well, David, what say you?
Shall we go into the men's locker room and put on our baggies?
Well, I've actually condensed that entire clip. And maybe even the entire series of Batman down into the slightly shorter clip.
I'm entering Batman.
Shall we go into the men's locker room?
Oh, Oh my God, people, what have we done? We've entered a whole new realm.
So actually, the reason I did that, because I was reading about Dark Knight Returns, the fact that by the time they got to the 80s, that was the image of Batman they were consciously trying to destroy.
Well, absolutely. And in fact, if you listen to... we've talked about it on the show before. If you listen to Kevin Smith's podcast, Fat Man on Batman, he actually is talking in one of the episodes, he is actually talking to Walt Flanagan, who is his person who runs his comic book store in Jersey, but also is the artist on Cacophony and Widening Gyre. And he says that when they first met, the way they first met was that he had heard that Flanagan was into Batman, and he basically... All Kevin Smith knew about Batman was the 66 series. And Batman had written... And Kevin Smith had written an essay about Batman. Based on his knowledge, which was the 66 thing. Yeah. Said, I hear you like Batman. Would you like to read my essay? Flanagan said, yeah, I'll have a look at it. Came back the next day, threw it at him and said, excuse my language. He said, you don't know shit about Batman. And gave him Dark Knight Returns. So that was like Kevin Smith's introduction to Batman, at this point. Everybody was trying to destroy that 66 image of Batman at that point. Because that was... And look, I love the 66 Batman. And there was a lot of people who did. But that's not the Batman of today.
No, but as we'll talk about, between this book, Dark Knight Returns, and The Killing Joke, you know, Batman was well and truly gritty by the end of the 80s. But, you know, for most people, Dick Grayson, Batman, Bruce Wayne's youthful ward.
Yeah, I like the introduction. He doesn't just say, hi, I'm Dick Grayson. I am billionaire
Bruce Wayne's youthful ward. Who is frequently...
I'm entering Batman.
Yeah. So. I quite like the fact that they're going to go put on their baggies. So that's
in the men's locker room.
In the men's locker room. Wow.
And I should say, later in that episode, it's the two of them in full costume. So Batman's still wearing the Batman outfit, but wearing board shorts.
I've seen that image. Yes, yeah. I've seen that image. I got to tell you, that took me off guard. And that's why we came back laughing, because Richard actually said before the show, you're not going to believe Da Vinci's Code. But he never tells me in advance what he's going to play. And so listening to this for the first time was like, oh my God. Almost, I gotta admit though, almost, but not quite Washing Marsha.
Washing Marsha is still up there, but
because that took me completely off guard.
Yeah, and when we did Washing Marsha as well, ripped a whole bunch of vintage clips at once because it was a day where we recorded five episodes to back. So by the time I got to it, I'd completely forgotten that I recorded this.
And what was so funny was the fact that it wasn't even. That was not even the clip. It's because I misheard it.
Yes.
And that was what was funny about it. So
so Watching Marsha became Washing Marsha forevermore.
Absolutely. And I think, I think we want that clip.
Oh, yes.
On the soundboard forevermore, which is, I'm going to go watch Marsha.
Now, when I've not been reading, watching sort of 60s episodes of Batman.
That was brilliant, by the way. Thank you.
I thought I did well with Smurf. We've both been reading a hell of a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Now, what I want to do is start something new this month as well, because we're doing this monthly, is actually go back and have a look at some of the new titles that have come out in the month that have really got our attention. But also some of the stuff that we've been reading as well, because we love comics and we don't just read these books that we pick each month. Now, last month we did Guardians of the Galaxy, which I'd mostly just read the Guardians 25 issues and a few other bits of ephemera. Loved it so much, I went right back to the start of Annihilation.
Yeah, which is what I did.
And then read all the way through from there. And that, not just the Annihilation, like all the Annihilation
specials. Did you reread the Guardians with it, or did you skip them?
I did, actually. Like I read them a lot faster than I did the first time around, but actually reading them in context, it gave them a whole different flavor. So that was really nice as well, and the Nova issues that came along with that, and then I started reading a bit more of Nova from the start again. So, you know, reading 4 years worth of comics, in one hit, is, apart from mind-blowing, it really gives you a sense of just how big this thing was. Because they basically went back and said, look, here's all the cosmic characters nobody cares about. Mm-hmm. Let's see what happens if we put them all in the same place at the same time. And the result is an awesomeness.
It is.
Really.
And I think you and I were discussing that by the time you reach the end... You are kind of burnt out a little bit
cosmic fatigue.
Yeah, a little bit of cosmic fatigue by the end. But that being said, I'm really stoked for upcoming Guardians because it's new writers now. So it's a fresh breath.
We'll talk a bit about that in the news. But yeah, Brian Michael Bendis is going to be doing some work on...
No, I didn't think he'd be the right fit for this. And you know me, I'm a Bendis fanatic. But I was worried at the idea of him doing this. But something we'll come back to with titles this month.
Exactly. Well, speaking of Bendis, I mean, I've been reading a lot of... this is not Bendis, but I've been reading a lot of Walking Dead, and I've read about 30-odd issues of that in the last 2 days.
That would be Brian Michael Kirkman.
But right? Brian Michael Kirkman. No, but the reason I mentioned Bendis...
That's not his name, people. Don't write to us.
my Brian Michael Bendis segue is that you've been reading a lot of New Avengers.
I have. I've actually read, God help me, every issue of New Avengers from issue one. Both volumes, one and two. I'm kind of on a kick at the moment because, and we've talked about this on the show before, because I dropped out of comics for a great period of time, that I came back into comics and so many events had taken place that I went and I read those events. So I read Civil War and I read Siege and I read, you know, it sounds like you read these events. But I'm actually really interested at the moment in finding out the stuff that happened in between those events because they were such major events. I don't want to go all the way back to the beginning of the Marvel Universe because that's, you know, I've got some 60s issues and we've made comment about this before. Sometimes they don't date as well as you think they might. But I've kind of picked my starting point. My starting point is kind of like around the 2000 mark. It's just the stuff leading up to Civil War. And I've been kind of going back, hitting that starting point and going, what led to Civil War? Then what were the events between Civil War and Siege? And what were the events between Siege and Fear itself? What were the events? And so just filling in those holes, because when you read those events and you're reading stuff like in one issue of Spider-Man, he's married and hiding out with Mary Jane, and suddenly he's not married anymore. And you go, what the hell happened in between those two events? So just trying to find out, fill those holes. So in doing that, I've been going back. Like, I went back and I reread all those Iron Mans at one point. And now, for this last month, I basically went back and read New Avengers, Luke Cage's Avengers. And it was fantastic. It is a really good read. And it's remarkable because when you first start reading it, they are outlaws because of the whole Civil War thing. And you actually they're kind of on the edge. They become outlaws. Then they become heroes. Then they get Avengers Mansion. And it's like you see this whole arc take place of this group of characters who are like all the second tier Avengers. It's like it's Jessica Jones and it's Luke Cage and it's Iron Fist. And as the team grows, you actually get it's the Bucky Captain America. It's because, of course, Captain America has been shot during that time. So it's Bucky trying to keep it together. It's Ms. Marvel, funnily enough, who starts off as being against them because she's, of course, supporting the Registration Act. And then by the second volume, she's a member of the New Avengers because she kind of swings around to their side. Spider-Man joins them because, of course, he also left the... So this is like the team that was formed of the people on the other side of the Registration Act. What's really my favorite moment, I think, is because Doctor Strange joins the team. And he helps them out a lot, but he officially becomes an Avenger in Volume 2. They actually offer him an Avengers card and say, you've helped us so much. Sometimes you have to, because he's a loner, and they're saying sometimes you need the support of your friends as well. And they issue him in, and Spider-Man makes his comment where he says, you'll be the Magic Avenger. And Dr. Strange just turns to him and says, don't ever say that again.
Well, it's funny because the two runs that we've been reading, and often I think it's in Annihilation Conquest, they often make reference to the fact that Civil War is going on Earth. And so it's got, I mean, and the thing I like, both of those things were major events happening completely separately to each other. And they sort of really only mentioned it. And I love at one point in, I think it's one of the Conquest spin-offs, they say, really, that's what this is about? Secret identities?
Yeah.
That's what you're fighting over? So because, like, you know, we're fighting for the very, the survival of the universe, you know. So you got that happening. So I think, you know, it's great to go back and read all these things and catch up. But also, the other thing we've been watching is a little bit of television, because it is the fall season.
The fall season started in full swing about 4 weeks ago, actually four or 5 weeks ago. But it was actually in the last 3 weeks that things really kicked off for the geek and the comic book geek, because we had the return, season three return of Walking Dead 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
And the premiere of... Da-da-da-da!
Arrow. Yes, it's a big... It's not a title that really sort of screams excitement, does it? Arrow.
I still don't know why they didn't call it Green Arrow.
No, I think they're frightened of all things green after Green Lantern. But let's start with Walking Dead, though, because I did a bit of a Walking Dead marathon and then leading straight into season three, and I also read a whole lot of comics. So I'm sort of in the comics. I'm just past the point where I guess the series is up to at the moment. But really, this is one of those series that I think that even whether you're into zombies or not, it's a massive crossover hit. I mean, we just ran into my girlfriend Susan on the way over here, and she was saying her favorite show at the moment. Now, this is someone who's had shown no interest whatsoever in zombie films at all. Mm-hmm. Doesn't like the gross horror films and things like that, but completely sucked in by the characters, completely sucked in by just the whole post-apocalyptic survival nature of this thing. So it's a great series in and of itself, even if it wasn't connected to a comic. But the fact that it is connected to a comic is why we're talking about it. Now, first season I thought was, having watched them all so recently, first season was magnificent and very close to the comics with a few departures, but it's pretty close. But second season, I don't know what it was doing.
Well, actually, I'll go back and just jump back to the first season. The first couple of episodes.
Very faithful. Yeah, yeah.
Out of the, I think it was six episodes.
Six episodes, right.
Out of the six episodes, they take a major turn in the third episode.
Yes, and then
it just basically goes, you go, where the hell am I?
Look, you know, spoilers and all on the show. And we've spoken.
We won't actually spoil. Let's make a deal. We normally do spoilers. Let's not spoil anything from season three at this point.
No, we won't spoil anything from season
three. Season one and two are fair game, but season three is running right now, so we'll be careful not to spoil anything there.
And we've spoken about this way back in one of the early issues of panels when we did the first 10 issues of Walking Dead or whatever it was. The fact that Shane dies fairly early on in the comics.
Yes.
He survived until the end of season two, effectively. Mm-hmm. Which completely changed the course of the TV show. And actually, I think made for a really interesting dramatic turn in there, the fact that they had that antagonism of Shane obviously being interested in Laurie that whole time. That built up and built up and built up. It didn't have a chance to really build up. It was five issues.
Whereas I disagree, though, because I actually think that it was a turning point, an early turning point in the comic that was really, really important because it was Carl that shot him.
No, I think the way it played out in the comic is just equally important. But as, for a television drama, I think it's really good. And the way that Kirkman writes the comic is written for a very different audience. Written for an audience that is used to waiting a month between their episodes.
Yep.
It is used, you know,
or the trade buyers who read them in chunks.
Who read them in chunks, and the pacing is really different. If you're reading them in a chunk, there'll be, you know, 60, 70 pages of people just talking. You know, punctuated by the odd zombie death. Whereas in the series, they obviously have to keep it a little bit tighter and a little bit, you know, more... Yeah. Not too much action-packed. And that's the interesting thing about the second season. It is a lot slower.
Let's not beat around the bush. The second season was boring, all right?
Yeah. Look, the whole farm thing is, what, 2-3 issues in the comics?
That's correct. And they drag it out over 12.
Yeah.
10
episodes.
10 in season two. Now, the thing I found was that the second half of season two showed promise.
Yeah.
The last 3 episodes, I think it was, were great.
Oh, they were cracking. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but you had to get through 7 episodes of looking for the little girl.
Mm.
And that was the most boring, and it almost lost me. I almost switched off and said, I'm never watching this show again. I was so bored by that time.
See my introduction to this episode of Behind the Panels.
So I was so bored going, where the hell's Sophia? Who cares at this stage?
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
That when it finally did, and the only thing that brought me back was somebody I work with said, man, you've got to see the latest episode of Walking Dead. Because I had fallen behind.
Mm.
And they said, you've got to watch it because it's amazing, blah, blah, blah. And it was the episode where the barn gets open.
Yeah, yeah. The scene where the barn gets open is a cracker of an episode. And everything after that is running at a pace that the whole series should have been running at. And so far, season three, which, as we said, started 3 weeks ago, is, and in fact, by the time this episode goes out, we'll probably be close to the fourth episode screening.
It'd probably be out by a day or so. Yeah.
But that has just cracked along with the prison setting, which was teased at the end of the second season.
Yep.
Has been probably the best thing that's happened to the television series, and it certainly was one of the best things that happened to the comic as well.
Yeah.
So, look, crack it along. You know, the introduction of the new characters are fantastic.
Although I really want Michonne to be in the team.
Yeah, and she's not there at the moment. The way they're playing it out, they're actually quite separate stories that are going on. It's because also between the comic and the TV series, characters have survived in the comic book series that didn't survive, have been killed off.
Or characters, because, I mean, I don't want to give any spoilers, but there are characters in the prison now who should have stayed on the farm, quite frankly.
Yeah, you know? yeah. And so it's kind of, it's a weird dichotomy that they've got going there in the new, in the TV series. Reading me at the moment, I'm watching season three and reading the comics simultaneously. It's like reading Bizarro versions of the same thing. It's weird. But look, you know, both of them impressively done. I am so hooked by the third season of this thing. Really can't wait to see more
and
episodes.
I never thought I would actually say this, because as much as I love Frank Darabont, but I think one of the best things they could have done is actually removed him.
Look, you know, and I think it's changing, because Frank Darabont is used to writing these long, measured stories, which is great and all, but I think the series did need a kick in the pants by midway.
Exactly, and I think Frank Darabont, when he directed that first episode, was brilliant.
Yeah.
But I think that...
because he was setting up a whole world.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that was perfectly suited for what he did and his job. I don't think he was a great showrunner.
No.
Because I think he was taking the series in a direction that the series needed to move on, and he couldn't. He couldn't seem to move it on.
Now, speaking of taking things in different direction, Arrow.
Look, I got to tell you, this has taken me completely off guard. I was expecting Smallville.
I was expecting it to be a pile of crap.
Yeah,
basically.
I was expecting it to be a cross between Smallville and Birds of Prey, and you know that quality level and so forth. Mm. And I got to tell you, I am hooked.
Yeah, look, it's amazing. It's no secret I'm a huge Green Arrow fan, and so I was kind of maybe an easy sell, but at the same time a very hard sell, because having read, you know, 40 years worth of comic history with this thing, I'm going to be the toughest critic. But I very easily was able to accept this as a completely different version of Green Arrow. He's not Green Arrow, he's Arrow. He's not even called that in the thing. He's just the archer or
the vigilante or whatever it is. But he is dressed in green and he is carrying a bow and arrow. Yeah. So he is Green Arrow.
Effectively. Given how crap the current run of the comic is. This is more Green Arrow than anything the comic has done for the last year and a half.
Well, this is really getting back into Andy Diggle territory, and it's really good.
It's a cross between Andy Diggle and Mike Grell, who wrote the majority of the Green Arrow books in the 80s. And really, he made him into the urban hunter character. Before that, he was off having silly adventures, kind of like what they're doing in the current run of the New 52.
Yes.
So they've really gone back to, like, it's like written by people. It's like what you said about Kevin Smith, who only had this concept of Batman from the 60s TV series. The current Green Arrow in the comic is written by people who only have a concept of having read him from when he had trick arrows back in the...
boxing glove arrows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the TV series is taken very much from Andy Diggle's year one, plus Mike Grell's Longbow Hunters and his whole urban hunter saga. Yeah. From the 80s,
For those who haven't watched it, without giving too many spoilers, the basic plot line of the series is he's been lost for five years. He's had some sort of weird adventures on this island, which we're getting in flashbacks. He's come back to the world now, this hunter, and he has a book that he has basically taken down names of everybody who has wronged the city. And he is basically out crossing these names off one by one, righting the wrongs of the city.
Yeah, and look, it's actually a really good formula, and it works really well. And they're dropping in little things, and at first you think, God, that sister character's annoying. And you think, but maybe she's Speedy.
Yeah.
You know, and then you think, okay, well, why have they cast Laurel Lance as a lawyer? And then in the last episode, and without spoiling it for too much thing, but she shows some prowess in the last episode where you think, maybe that could lead to Black Canary.
That's right.
You know.
And we've started to set up partnerships or team, possible people who could work in a team with this vigilante.
Yeah.
He's now going to have his lair. He's working on this plan for a lair, and you can imagine he wants to populate that lair with people who can work with him and stuff like that. So it's really clever. They're building it and they're taking their time to build it.
Yeah.
It's like three episodes and we're still wondering what the hell happened. So there's, you know, it's...
And I should say, the pilot episode of Arrow for the CW was the highest rated show on the CW in 3 years.
And you want to know the better part of that? The second episode lost not a single percentage point.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
That is unheard of in television.
Yeah.
It didn't lose a viewer. And so everybody came back for a second watch. And you suddenly go, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know? So it's doing really well. Now, that being said, the premiere episode of Walking Dead this year is the highest rated drama series in history.
Yeah, no, I don't read that. That's the thing.
Network television and cable.
Yeah.
The highest rated television premiere, premiere ever.
Yeah, and like, I can understand why. It was an amazing episode.
And it was an amazing finale. That was the thing, though. It was an amazing finale to last season. everybody.
With
come
Rick
in.
Kind of just going, look, you know, damn it, I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore.
Exactly. You know. So look, television, geek television at the moment is on a roll. It'll be very interesting because we're going to add to that next year with S.H.I.E.L.D. and possibly Incredible Hulk.
I'll believe that when I see it.
That's Del Toro. All right. But we're definitely going to get S.H.I.E.L.D. next year. We're seeing a resurgence of geek-based television.
It is a new golden age for television, for geek television. I want to quickly do something.
Let's refer to it as genre television, I guess. Let's go there.
Now, I want to do something we haven't really done before, which is because we're monthly, we can do this. We'll do a quick rundown of the new things that have come out in the last month. Mm-hmm. Some of them will be worth spending a little time on. Some of them won't be. I think the first two we can group together. We've mentioned Marvel Now 0.1.
Yep.
And Avengers Assemble 8.
Yep.
This is basically the introduction, two things are happening here. Marvel Now 0.1 is setting up about 5 series that will be ongoing.
Now, my question is, though, about that, is Marvel 0.1, is that going to be a continuous series as well?
No, that was a one-shot.
So it's a one-shot off just to introduce
comics. Yeah, they did it about a year or so ago. They set a book called Marvel 0.1, and that introduced, that was the first book that actually introduced the New Nova.
Right.
That was the first time we saw the New Nova, and then he didn't appear again until Avengers versus X-Men in 2 issues.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then he's only appeared again in this Marvel Now 0.1, but that's leading into an ongoing series, which from that book actually looks like it could kind of work.
Yeah, it could.
Yeah.
There's actually 2 books in there that are related
as
well.
The other book, which has got us very excited given last month's episode that we did, is an introduction of basically the origin of Star-Lord.
Yep.
But that's a bit of a tease because there will be an ongoing Guardians of the Galaxy series.
Written by
Brian Michael Bendis. But we'll cover that more in the news. But that was the tease there. So both of those books, I picked them up. Avengers Assemble 8, which is the end of an arc crossing.
Now, what's
over.
Really interesting about that, though, is Avengers Assemble is a book I didn't like. I thought it was kind of campy, kind of silly. It almost felt like junior reading.
Mm.
It almost felt like, for all those people who come into comic books who have watched the Avengers movie, let's just give them something that they can kind of have a look at.
You know what I mean?
It was not the Avengers. It was something else. You know what I mean? But the last, was it 3 issues?
Three or four issues
have actually been really good.
He's made a conscious effort to bring it back to the Marvel U and also bring in the Guardians. And at first, when they were introduced, it was kind of like, it was like our Guardians, but not really.
Yeah, and it felt like a kidified Guardians as well.
But there's this one moment, particularly in Avengers Assemble 8, where they're talking about the Cancerverse, and they say, and I can't remember who it is, turns to Peter Quill and says, well, how did you get out? And he just gives him this look.
Yeah.
And you think, right, he's setting it up for... And he's also set up the idea that Iron Man might want to go travel with the Guardians at some stage, which we know is going to happen in the ongoing
series.
Which
I'm kind of excited about because Iron Man, I've been reading all of the Iron Mans. I've read every issue of Iron Man from Extremist to now, basically. These binges that I've been going through. And I'm actually at a point now where I think Iron Man needs to do something radically different because it seems to be... that situation where you go... we see this in comic books a lot. They write themselves into a corner and then reboot. Right? We're at that point with Iron Man right now where it feels like we've done as far as we can go with the storyline. It's time to start something new. So this is something radically different. Mm. And I would like to see Tony Stark take on a different challenge.
I'm really looking forward to it. Now, a couple of the other big events that happened this month. One of them was, and I don't know if you read this, Daredevil End of Days, the first issue of that.
I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, definitely get around to this one because we're talking about Dark Knight Returns this month. This is the Dark Knight Returns for Daredevil.
It's also written by Bendis, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's it's an excellent, 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 excellent book.
It's actually
a dream team. It's actually written by pretty much everybody who's been involved, written and drawn collaboratively by almost everybody who's been involved in a big way in Daredevil over the last few years, from the older issues with Bill Sienkiewicz to David Mack involved and Bendis is involved, and just
Help me out because I haven't read it yet. I've got it sitting here and I haven't read it yet. Is it within the current Daredevil run or is it a standalone?
It's standalone and it's set at the future. It is basically the end. It is the death of Daredevil. And it starts with...
But it's not related to the current run of Daredevil.
It's not related to the current run directly, but this is where we're ultimately building up to.
Right.
Is what they're saying. This is in canon as well. This is going to be Daredevil's official death in an indeterminate number of years from now.
In an indeterminate number of years
from now. Okay. But this is
so canon. We're getting a glance of the future.
We're getting a... Yeah. And it's what I really like is that they've got Ben Urich is the main character, effectively, in the first issue, going back and investigating. He's the Daily Bugle reporter. Going back and investigating how this happened.
Interesting.
And that's what I really like
Ben Urich. He's a great character. He's a really, really good character during the Civil War siege.
Yeah. Things. It's kind of got a bit of an Alias vibe to it. So to picture that.
I mean, so I'll have a look at that. As I said, that's actually one, the first of how many issues? Because it's actually a limited run.
I think it's a 5-issue run.
Is it 5? Okay.
Yeah. Now, the other kind of alternate universe sort of thing that's happened this month is Wolverine Max just came out this week. Well, the Max line lives again.
I thought it was over.
Yeah, it's back with Wolverine. It's basically, I won't labor this one too much because it's only just come out this week, so I don't want to spoil it. But it is an alternate sort of depiction of Wolverine in a way. It's not in canon. It's not in continuity because they've run out of
it's
ways
about
to put
Japan
it.
Japan again, though, isn't
it's
it?
It's about Japan again, and he's there, and he's lost his memory, but he knows he's got claws, and he heals really quickly. Because the first scene, he loses both legs at the knees. In a plane crash, and then they suddenly grow back, and he's, you know, defending himself with claws and stuff, and he's trying to work out what's going on. And I kind of like where it's going, so I like this.
It's just a reinvention of his origin again.
Okay,
that's interesting. Look, it can't be any worse than the other X-Men title that came out last month that we talked about.
Oh, was that the...
was that for the first X-Men, which was awful.
That was terrible. Look, there's been a bunch of stuff coming out. I'm going to skip over some of these. Look, Phantom Stranger came out. Wasn't too bad. Uncanny Avengers we talked about last time, I think.
And it's not getting any better.
No. Look, one really cute one-shot that came out this month.
I've got it. I haven't read it yet, but I flicked through it and God, it's cute.
It is cute as hell. A Babies versus X Babies. If you were sick as I was of Avengers versus X Men by the end of it, this is the book you got to read. Because basically, the plot line is that baby Steve Rogers, his favorite teddy bear, Bucky Bear, has been stolen by the nefarious kid across the road, Scott Summers. And so he calls for the kiddie Avengers to assemble while Scott Summers' Avengers assembles his X-Men. And it's just an all-on brawl in the street. And one of my favorite lines in the book, and I think I've written it down here somewhere. I don't know if I've got it here, but it's like Hulk love him, Bear. He never let him go. You know, when he finally gets hold of the bear. And there's one shot where it's like they go, Hulk throws Wolverine into space. And it's like Galactus suckling on the moon. Baby Galactus. It's great. I love it. I love it. So definitely check that one out. Look, a bunch of other stuff came out. Must read is Talon number one, which follows on from Talon number zero last month. That is also written by Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV.
I'm looking forward to that.
Spinning directly out of the Court of Owls stuff. Just as good. Just as awesome. One of the best new titles. Really loved that. Punisher Warzone number one feels a little bit familiar, but it's quite a good book because it's actually got Spider-Man kind of arguing to say, look, guys, why aren't we doing anything? This guy's a mass murderer and we're too good for it. And it's only Steve Rogers steps up and says, actually, you're right. We probably should be doing something about
this. Which is ironic because during Civil War, Steve Rogers actually recruited the Punisher. So.
Yeah. But they're sort of finally said, like, no, by doing this, we're condoning it. So it's then them out trying to get Steve Rogers. So I'm sorry to get the Punisher. So I don't know whether or not it's going to end up being a Marvel Universe kills the Punisher in a little reverse.
And it's kind of a very different war zone, isn't it? Because we've had war zone before, but it was about the criminals. Yeah. And now it's...
And this is written by Greg Rucka, who's been writing this marvelous run on Punisher lately. Right. So to go check that out.
Punisher at the moment is a must read. The current run on Punisher is a must read. It is brilliant.
Just running quickly through, National Comics, they've been doing a series of one-shots.
I read the last one. I haven't read this one, but the last one was Vampire Girl.
Vampire Girl wasn't...
I didn't mind it, actually.
It wasn't too bad. There was one called The Looker, which was okay. This one's really good. This is Madam X, which is basically...
The Looker is the vampire.
The Looker's the vampire, right. This one is Madam X, which isn't too... Yeah, I quite like Looker, actually.
Yeah.
Madam X is a rebranded Madam Xanadu. She's already appeared in Justice League Dark and in Demon Knight, I think.
Yeah.
But this is just making her. This is like a cross between Medium, the TV show Medium, because she's like this psychic who gets called in by.
Now, before you go any further, just so people who are uninitiated, National Comics is what DC Comics used to be
called. Yeah,
that's right. So this is kind of like this throwback idea where they've gone. These are National Comics one-shots. And I don't even know if they're actually within canon or within...
Well, look, they haven't said whether or not they're going to be in canon. They haven't said whether or not they're going to be ongoing series. I suspect some of these will be picked up
right.
as ongoing series, maybe filling in those one or two extra books.
Looker couldn't be continued on. Looker was a one-shot deal. And it was cute.
Madame Xanadu has left... ends with a cliffhanger. Right. Madame X ends with a cliffhanger. Where they could definitely carry that. I want to see it happen as a series. It's actually quite a good book.
All right, I'm going to catch up with that.
Because it has got this kind of medium thing where she's a psychic employed by a law firm to investigate, yep. you know, stuff. And I can totally see it working. And she goes up against this voodoo queen and this, that one. So it's sort of somewhere between Medium and Dominic Laveau over in Vertigo.
Yeah,
so it's sort of got that sort of twin vibe to it. The other new book, it was a mini-series that came out by Grant Morrison. Now, Grant Morrison, I've been a bit patchy on his Superman work at the moment, his Action Comics work. But Happy is the book that you must read.
Happy is brilliant.
It is, yeah.
It actually took me completely off guard because I've had it for a while and I sat there and went on the train in to work one day. I said, oh, okay, I'll finally pick this up and read it. And I just devoured it.
Yeah.
You know, it is so, you sit there going, look, what's going on? Look, you know?
Depending on which cover you've got, there's a character that appears, a completely insane character, which is completely in keeping with Grant Morrison's motifs today. Ooh. But he, just this character appears and you think, you turn to the page and you go, right, that's the book I'm reading. Awesome. You know, and it's kind of a little bit like Harvest is doing something similar, which is a miniseries.
Which is also a must read. Harvest is brilliant.
Definitely a must read at the moment. But this new series, Happy, it's already been optioned for a movie by RZA with one issue out. At about the time we're recording this, the second issue is about due out on the shelves next week. Can't wait to read it. It's only going to be four issues, which is about, I think, the point usually where Grant Morrison goes off the deep end.
It's a little bit how I feel about Mark Millar as well. These guys work best in short form.
So yeah. Can't wait to see the end of this thing. Must read this book. Look, just there's other things happening at the moment. Andy Diggle did an issue of Doctor Who.
I didn't even know that, and that's really very curious because I never was interested in the Doctor Who comics.
And it's actually quite good. It's set in the current Doctor Who's universe. Mm-hmm. So for those of you who were lamenting the loss of Rory and Amy after the end of the middle of the current series, the much-publicised departure of Amy Pond, we'll be pleased to see some further adventures with them in it,
right.
Written by someone who we're quite fond of on the show. There's an event going on, I'll just mention quickly, called Minimum Carnage, which is obviously a play on the Maximum Carnage from the 90s. It involves the return of Carnage, and Venom is now like an agent of is he S.H.I.E.L.D.? No, he's...
Was for a while there. He was actually one of Norman Osborn's fake Avengers. He was an agent of Hammer, basically.
Yeah.
I don't know what he's doing now.
He's some sort of secret agent. It's crossing over between two minimum...
This is not the Eddie Brock Venom anymore. So
they're basically crossing over between two Minimum Carnage standalone books that bookend the series. And then there's Scarlet Spider and Venom have a book each in the middle, and it's crossing over. And they're in a microverse. There's all sorts of weird things happening there. It's not great, but it's just this kind of weird little mini-series that decided to launch.
And to sum all this up is a quote from Spider-Man from New Avengers, where when inquiring about what his deal is, he said, "I have clones."
I love that. Yeah, no, I love that. There's finally one thing. If you've never read it before, I want to urge everyone to pick up a copy of Dark Horse Presents. Doesn't matter which month you pick up, just pick it up.
They're all self-contained.
Well, some of them have got ongoing things. Dark Horse Presents is basically an anthology book that comes out every month. It's a beautiful 80-page prestige kind of format. There's a great introduction from the editor this month where he talks about digital comics versus print and says that, you know, strangely enough, digital comics have been increasing print sales. And he said, that's why we produce beautiful books like this, because it's the sort of thing you want to pick up off the shelf.
Yeah, because people find it easier to read the digital comic because they can read it on their iPads or what have you, but then they want to collect the book.
And this is basically an almost ad-free 80-page prestige book. It's a slightly higher price point, but it's got about almost a dozen short stories in there by some really good artists and some big names, and some of the stories were ongoing from previous issues. Some of the stories are just brand new one shots. There's a great little adaptation of an Edgar Allan Poe in there. Just little things like that, and to me, that's what comics are all about. Just fun, little discovery. This is how you discover artists or writers like through things like that. So if you haven't checked it out before, this is one of those little books that you might have to check out. But I think we've been babbling on about this month's new release. That's a new section of that I like to call things that came out this month.
we need a theme for that, don't we? Things that came out this month. Things that came out.
I think that we should move on to something that we do have a theme for.
What a scoop!
Had to cut you off. You were waffling.
Which is that? Was all I was going to say.
My finger slipped.
I'd say which is this, and then I was going to press the button. But it's all
right. See, the problem is we have competing soundboards, so we're all trying to fight each other for it.
Well, for the first story, I'm going to roll straight into this and talk about New York Comic Con. That happened this month.
It did.
A lot of big announcements that came out of that. I'm going to run through them very, very quickly. First of all, Joss Whedon confirmed that the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV series will see Agent Phil Coulson in it.
Yay. But I don't know how they're going to make that work. No, but anyway.
He basically said, look, there was never going to be a S.H.I.E.L.D. show without Agent Phil Coulson. He's headlining the show and always was.
So the question is, will the S.H.I.E.L.D. series be a prequel leading up to the Avengers, or will there be something that has brought Coulson back?
Yeah, exactly. Some people have said he's going to be Vision. Some people have said that he didn't actually die.
I love the fact that the speculations about him not dying have gone so far.
Yeah.
That it has now come down to the fact that because the British Board of Censorships removed the sword out of his chest, they're saying that they're retconning his death. It. Yeah. It's like, no, people, that is the British Board of Censorship.
Now, the other big news that came out of New York Comic Con, as far as I was concerned, we've already mentioned this, is that there's going to be two new series, Guardians of the Galaxy.
Hell yeah!
By Brian Michael Bendis and Civil War artist Steve McNiven.
Hell yeah!
alongside a Nova series by Marvel head of television Jeff Loeb.
Hell yeah!
And drawn by Ed McGuinness. Not sold yet, as we said. Iron Man also joins the Guardians.
The cover for the Guardians, that number one issue that you got on your website, go check out therealbits.com.
Nice plug. Thanks,
thank man. You. You're welcome. Yeah. Pay me later. has the new lineup of the Guardians. As a diehard Guardians fan I'm going to look at it and go, there's a couple of issues I have. Gamora is not nearly as sexy as she was.
She's not nearly as naked as she normally is.
No, she's just not as sexy. She's not as buxom. She's not as curvy.
Ed McGuinness, are you listening?
We can work on that a little bit, and she needs to show more skin.
Sorry, Steve McNiven, rather, not Ed McGuinness.
Drax looks pretty much the same, except they're giving him some armor. So I can only think that Stark Tech is involved here in some way. But of course, we have Iron Man in his new cosmic suit.
Yep.
You've got to have a cosmic Iron Man. And I want to know why Groot is all lit up like a Christmas tree.
Because it doesn't come out until February. So I'm wondering why it's like Christmas and they forgot to take the lights down.
Maybe, I don't know. Rocket Raccoon is looking pretty badass there, though. Yeah. So, and the other thing I got to say is Peter Quill, he needs the helmet.
Yeah.
You know, it's just little things, because we've had so many issues.
Yeah.
It's like kind of going, here's a new Captain America, he hasn't got a shield.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, so, you know, we got to kind of, there's a few things you got to get in there. But I am jazzed.
I am super jazzed. Some of the other big titles that got announced. Speaking of like TV writers, David S. and film writers, David S. Goyer is apparently returning to comics, and he's doing a 13 issue something.
Well, considering that
with Geoff Johns,
everything that he's written has turned to crap lately. Yeah. In the cinema world, maybe it's a good idea to come back to comics.
Yeah, so he's I think he worked with Geoff Johns once before on a JSA thing, JSA Jello thing, and that was quite good. So he's coming back to that. Our good friend Andy Diggle is keeping very, very busy with artist Tony Daniel, and they'll be taking over from Grant Morrison on Action Comics as of issue 18.
I'm actually really jazzed about that, because Diggle is a great writer, and Action Comics needs a resuscitation at this point.
It's been inconsistent. There's been that alien story that's been going on. There's timeline jumping, all that sort of stuff. I'll be glad to see it.
We need to get to the paddles out and go clear. And actually jumpstart this thing.
Well, speaking of Superman, even more exciting is that Scott Snyder, yes, the architect of the Court of Owls and Talon, is going to be doing another Superman book, which a lot of people are thinking, assuming will be called Man of Steel or something to that effect.
Probably thinking that's probably the title.
Yeah. So given that he has done no wrong with the Batman character for the last, 12 and something months.
And considering that these are the two jewels in the crown of DC's crown.
All we need to do is get him on Wonder Woman and the whole Trinity. Oh, God,
I would love that. I tell you what, as much as I like Brian Azzarello, when he does his own stuff, when he does stuff like Joker and stuff like that, he's not right for Wonder Woman at the moment.
No.
Wonder Woman is flailing.
Well, speaking of Snyder, he's still going to be very busy, because he's also going to be doing a new Vertigo title called The Wake. Which is going to be alongside Sean Murphy, who's doing Punk Rock Jesus at the moment.
Ah, okay.
So that's going to be pretty awesome. And he's told Comic Book Resources that it's a, quote, blend of science fiction and horror on an epic scale. It is a post-apocalyptic element too, which I'm really excited about. I'm sold. I'm down.
I'm sold.
Another Vertigo title that's due out is Trillium.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a 10-issue limited series that's partially set in 1784. Sorry, it's partially set 1,784 years into the future.
That's better.
in 3797, but also set 92 years in the past in 1921.
Interesting.
It's going to be written and illustrated by Jeff Lemire, who's doing Animal Man at the moment. So,
okay, I will have a look at that.
Look, finally, the last one I'll mention. Well, actually, I'm going to mention two more. Second last one I'll mention is Justice League of America, which is effectively going to be replacing Justice League International.
With a better team.
It's going to be written by the incredibly busy Geoff Johns, with art by David Finch. The team will consist of Green Arrow, Katana, Martian Manhunter, Baz the Green Lantern, as I'm going to call him from now on, Stargirl Vibe, who I'm not familiar with at all, Hawkman, and, interestingly enough, Catwoman.
Interesting. Look, it's a much better lineup. We've said many a time that Justice League International suffered from not having a heavy hitter. We actually have several in this team, so it looks like we actually have a better, more solid team. It actually looks a lot like the old Justice League, just without Batman and Superman.
You know?
It's weird because you feel like they should be standing up front. So it'll be an interesting book. The things that have intrigued me the most are hopefully they can resuscitate Green Arrow, because Green Arrow is dying. Who's replacing Katana on Birds of Prey? So
she can be in both if she wants to.
Well, no, because Birds of Prey are on the run from the law.
That's true.
So Katana has obviously jumped ship. It'll be very curious to see what's going on in that side of things. And Catwoman. Whoever saw Catwoman in a super team before?
Why not?
So, why not? She's a great character. And look, I'm a big fan of the comics still. I think the Catwoman book is a solid book. And I like the fact that in the comic book, in her own solo book, she is going more away from crime and more towards helping people anyway, much to the dismay of her fence and other people who are basically saying, can you just focus on getting some jewels in here? But she keeps helping people. So I guess that's the direction they were heading her in. So,
still on DC, the final story, or the final announcements that I'll mention is that some old school DCU will be happening. It's Kevin Smith finally said he's getting around to, he's penned all but the last two issues, I think.
I actually listened to, he has a podcast called The Secret Stash, which is a companion podcast to Comic Book Men.
Yep.
And I listened to the most recent issue of that, or most recent episode of that this morning, funnily enough. And in it, somebody asked him, because it was actually a live event at Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody actually asked, when is it coming? And he actually said, it will be out by the end of 2013. Mm-hmm. He has written everything but the last script, and Flanagan has actually drawn the first four.
Excellent.
So it is almost finished.
Just start releasing them, man.
And what's interesting, though, is the fact that he got criticized. He actually talks about this. He said he got criticized when Widening, and we always called it the Widening Gyre. He actually calls it the Widening Gyre.
Okay.
So we actually have his pronunciation. He actually calls it the Widening Gyre. But he actually says that
I think both are acceptable.
I think so, too. I like Gyre. It sounds better.
It's easy to say.
But he said that he got heavily criticized because he had Batman wet himself, if you remember this one point where he actually has Batman wet himself. And everybody jumped up and down basically saying, how dare you do that, blah, blah, blah. And you're rewriting history. But as he said, in between this, DC has basically dumped their history anyway and rebooted the entire universe. And he actually went to the head of DC and said, when do you need this book by? And he said, well, now that it's self-contained, because it doesn't fit within the current DC universe, do whatever you want and whenever you want. And so basically he's been given an open check to basically do anything he wants because it doesn't fit within the continuity.
It'll be Batman and Joker on surfboards in the men's locker room by the end of
with their baggies on.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to it. And if you haven't read Widening Gyre, however you want to say it, if you haven't read those first six issues,
let's call it the Widening Gyro.
read this immediately. And as soon as that second six come out, we're going to do it on the show as the complete 12. It is friggin' fantastic, let me just tell you. So, we loved Cacophony, and this is a pseudo sequel to Cacophony. Mm. Anyway, interestingly enough, he actually said in the interview, or in the question when he actually responded, he actually said, it is a sequel to Cacophony and a pseudo sequel to Quiver. So he actually brought Quiver up, and he said that it is related to both of those books.
Interesting.
So interesting it is.
So we might see Arrow yet in the...
We may. So it'd be interesting to see where him and Flanagan are going.
Which we might actually see some old school Green Arrow in there as well. Now, just finally on DC before we get off the comics news... DC announced its full list of solicitations for January 2013, and in style, it's doing some more long overdue deaths for the final issues of Frankenstein, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. it's a combination between Shade and S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah, there you go. That'll work.
Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, Blue Beetle, Legion Lost, and I can't believe it's getting cancelled, Grifter.
It's so good. it's such a masterpiece. How could they be cancelling this thing? Now, look, we've said it before, we've said it again. Just because you put a tissue on your face doesn't make you a superhero.
Yeah, it was a red hanky.
whatever. But the point is that I'm not going to miss Blue Beetle. I'm not going to miss Grifter. I'm not going to miss Legion Lost. I will moderately miss Frankenstein, Agent of Shade, because I was a late convert.
Mm.
I actually didn't like it to start with, got converted, and now they're cutting it. So that's kind of annoying. But
they are also cancelling G.I. Joe.
Wake up.
G.I. Combat in December. We talked about this last time, the fact that they're cancelling the same book twice in a year. They are actually in January launching a new title called Threshold, which spins out of Green Lantern New Guardians.
Right.
And they've also got Justice League of America coming in February. Mm-hmm. It still only leaves us with about 49 in the New 52. So we suspect that there will be about... two or three new titles coming in the next year.
Yeah, and we talked about it before the show. I think some of this is going to be... And don't get me wrong, I actually think we've got some more cuts to come yet.
Mm.
Sword and Sorcery is crap.
Yeah.
The Amethyst or whatever. Whatever it's called. It's crap. I read the first issue and I went, this is one step up from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. This is not good writing. It's a terrible book and it will not be missed. So that I think that will be cut. But I think we're going to see a question book coming at some point.
I think so.
I think Shazam will get his own book at some point.
For sure.
And I think, because we've got the Trinity Wars coming up, I wouldn't be surprised if Pandora gets a book.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised either. Actually, one other... I just remembered just off the top of my head. One of the things I forgot to mention in the new this month, Batman number 13.
Oh, yes.
Which was the first book of the Death of the Family
yes.
run. Amazing. Return of the Joker, if you're not on board.
It's terrifying.
It is terrifying.
Terrifying book.
Because there's two stories in there, and they're both terrifying, and it starts... basically, it's running through all the Bat books, their issue 14s and 15s.
Yeah, so far, it started in Catwoman and in Batman.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the first two out at this point.
I think the next one's Batgirl, so it'll be... sort of playing on her. And the whole title, Death of the Family, is obviously play on Death in the Family.
Yep.
When Robin got killed... I'm predicting someone's not going to end up happy at the end of this.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, well, I think that's it for our comics news. How about a little bit of this? Movie news. I don't think anything's happened in the world of movie news.
Nah.
So we can just move on. Oh, wait, hang on a minute. Warner Brothers did announce that the Justice League film will be coming out in 2015.
Is this the same Justice League movie that they had planned before with George Miller? Or is this
no idea. They could be doing anything at this point. They haven't given us any details. They'll be doing their first Justice League movie in 2015, by which stage we'll have Iron Man 3, Thor the Dark World, Captain America the Winter Soldier, Guardians of the Galaxy, and maybe...
2015, Avengers 2.
Yeah, and Justice League will be going up against Avengers in the same summer.
Yeah,
basically. So, meanwhile, while Justice League get around to their first film, then Marvel have released two waves of films to cinemas. But on that point, there was a trailer that came out this week for a movie. What? Play this. I don't think anyone's heard of this.
It's a little indie film. Just have a listen.
Just play the audio.
Got a lot of apologies to make. Nothing's been the same since New York. You experience things, and then they're over. I can't sleep. And when I do, I have nightmares. Honestly, there's 100 people who want to kill me. I hope I can protect the one thing I can't live without.
There is no such thing.
I've got to go clean up a little bit.
Was that the THX sound test at the
end? Look, it is an awesome trailer for Iron Man 3 that...
Oh, is that what that was?
Yeah. It is an awesome trailer for Iron Man 3, and I do recommend that everybody goes out and have a look at it. Although, interestingly enough, my son is here as our audience, as always, and he made a very interesting observation, though. He said there is no humor in it at all.
None.
And in the first two Iron Man, even in the trailers, there's always like these little jabs or little bites of humor. None. This is dark.
That first line pretty much sets the tone. I haven't been the same since New York.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, dude, I mean,
this is a shawarma-free zone, dude.
Yeah. I reckon the opening shot will be him finishing the shawarma, sort of dabbing the corners of his mouth, and then things will start exploding.
Now, the only criticism I have about this is the same criticism I have about comic books in general, which is... Okay, so somebody, you know, you see in the trailer, you know, they blow up his house and they're destroying his life and they blow up all his suits of armor. So why doesn't he just say, you know, hey, Thor and Banner and company, I need some help here, you know?
Yeah, and it's because it's going
to
be...
I've never understood that, why they can't just, like, call out to, like, these people that they work with.
He's a man alone fighting against the system. No, he's... I've spotted one thing in there. I think that there is... Other people have noticed this as well. In the trailer, there is a giant bunny. Just in one scene.
You tweeted this. This impressed you so much you had to
tweet
it.
There is a giant pink bunny just randomly in one of the scenes. I think the other Avengers are hiding inside.
It's a Trojan bunny.
They'll just pop out at the end and go, we're here.
Oh, it's a little bit like Avengers Assemble with the suit of armor.
Okay. That bunny could be the Mark 9 armor. That contains the entire Avengers.
Stealth armor, right? It's like it hide at fairs.
And it's just one giant, you know, D battery that plugged into the back. It's like the Duracell bunny. It just keeps going and going.
It's a remote control bunny that's powered by the suit of armor.
That's Jarvis. Jarvis is in the bunny.
Ah, Jarvis is in the bunny. All right, yeah, okay, cool.
That's the new War Machine armor. The bunny with like a little shoulder.
You can just see it, dude. You can see Stark coming up to Rhodey and saying, so, for stealing that suit of armor in Iron Man 2, this is your new armor.
Yeah.
Payback's a bitch.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, that's going to be an exciting film coming out. Meanwhile, another Marvel film that's being owned by Fox is X-Men Days of Future Past, which will be the sequel to X-Men First Class. But apparently, what's his name? Matthew Vaughn has just exited the film as its director. So he won't be following
Project's
up.
Over.
Yeah, well, apparently the shortlist is Bryan Singer.
Yeah, well, which he probably would need a job by then because he hasn't had a track record lately as a director.
No. I mean, the last X-Men film he did was X2, right?
X2, yeah. And then he went off and did the Superman Stalker movie.
That's right.
Yeah, so after they did the Superman Stalker, and now he's got Jack the Giant Killer coming out, which I can predict... like zero
that, and that got pushed back and back and back and back.
So I mean, realistically, Bryan Singer needs a job.
Yeah.
So
it may as well be this one. Onto more Marvel news, where again Warner is still thinking about their maybe making a Justice League film. Marvel is spinning the cinematic universe off into television with S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
And we already know that
Coulson's
going to be there. Clark Gregg was the first official announcement. Now Ming-Na Wen has been announced.
Why is this name familiar to me?
Now she was most recently seen in. Some TV show. I can't remember. I have forgotten.
So she's a big memorable name.
She's a big memorable name. No, she was in.
She wasn't in Expendables 2, was she?
Keep talking, David.
That's not her in Expendables 2, is she?
No, keep talking while I look this up.
Sorry, I'm mixing her up with someone else.
She is.
But okay, she could be very interesting. I'm just fluffing it here. So
she's allegedly being cast as a soulful and slightly damaged by her combat experiences. Melinda is an ace pilot, a weapons expert, and a soldier who can and has gone beyond the call of duty
in her baggies.
Apparently, now she was she was a series regular in Stargate Universe.
Okay.
She was the voice of Fa Mulan in the Mulan films.
Okay.
She was in the Joy Luck Club. That's probably where you know her
that's
from.
That's where I know her from.
You might also know her from a recurring role in Two and a Half Men.
Oh, I actually probably know her from that too, because I watched Two and a Half Men. So, can I have a look at her picture for a second? Spin that screen around for a second. Oh, yeah, I know her. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So it's her that we just looked at. She's going to be in the film.
Yes,
so
this girl that you can't see
right now. So that's our movie news for this week. I'm moving on.
Okay, cool.
Yep.
So that would mean that we're leading into our book.
Yeah, so I think there's a theme for that.
Yeah.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
And Richard's destroying the studio while we're playing clips.
I was so angry about the pick of the week. I'm leaving.
All right, so pick of the week.
Yeah, look, it's not a book that anyone's ever read. It's it's The Dark Knight Returns by Frank Miller. Barely worth talking about.
All right, we're done. Let's go.
Yep. look, as far as I can tell, it's about Superman. it's got some artwork.
No, in it. Did you actually read the book?
Robin becomes a crossdresser in this one. Is that right?
That's right. That's the one. Yeah. It's transvestite Robert. Robin.
Transvestite
Robin.
As far as I can tell,
and there's a very
the X-Men are in it. Or at least the mutants.
The mutants are in it, and a very effeminate Joker.
Yeah, he was actually putting on lipstick at one point. No, darling, I brought my own.
Yes.
now, look, this is... We say this a lot. This is Comics 101, people.
This is a seminal work. This was reinvented. Look, I don't think it's much to state or overstating the fact that this is the comic that reinvented comic books. All right, this was where what is it? This ain't your daddy's comic books. All right.
Well, look, as we said at the top, this was a conscious push to move away from campy 60s Batman, which wasn't just happening in the TV series, but happening in the comics as well throughout the 60s and 70s. They realized that Batman was probably...
Let's be very clear on this. Bob Kane liked the 60s series.
Yeah.
Bob Kane liked that campy air. That's what he made. People sit there and go, oh, Bob Kane created this amazing Dark Knight character. No, Frank Miller made an amazing Dark Knight character.
And this is before Alan Moore's Killing Joke.
So this is an amazing book, and this is basically in a nutshell, if you were to distill it down, it is basically taking the concept that Batman and the other superheroes are basically retired. They're out of action. The government, there's hints of it. They never overtly say it, but there are hints of it that they were shut down. Everything was shut down, and Superman is like the only one still working, but he is now puppet of the government.
He does make reference to it later in the book. He says, like, you know, they came after you were the excuse that they came after.
That's right.
You know, your brutality is the reason they turned
Superman
against us.
Says this. Yeah, that's right.
And Superman was really only able to survive in this world because he became, as you said, a governmental puppet.
Yeah, he signed an agreement with them saying that he would be their deterrent, basically,
which is very much in line with Frank Miller's very fascist world point worldview, but it's weird because Frank Miller's very right wing. This would actually be more comfortable being written by Alan Moore at the time.
Agreed,
because he's actually depicting Superman as a fascist puppet, and Batman as the true hero
fighting against the system,
which is what Alan Moore would do a couple of years later with V for Vendetta and things like that, and he also did. A few years after this, he continued this dark streak of Batman with books like The Killing Joke. So it's a really interesting point in Miller's career as well that he's not quite gone off the deep end.
This is, quite frankly, the best Miller has ever been.
This is Miller at the peak of his game, and it actually says here, and if you look at the Wikipedia entry, sort of talking about how it's Frank wanted to take the time that was needed to get the job done. as the culmination of the quest towards artistic independence. This was an author being given license to create at his own pace the kind of character that he wanted to create.
Exactly, and that's why what makes The Dark Knight so interesting is, if a Dark Knight Returns, I should say, so interesting. A, we'd be very, very clear, the term The Dark Knight was created for this. Batman wasn't known as The Dark Knight before this. So he basically has created a alternate universe. This is not canon. It doesn't fit within the DC universe in almost any way, shape, or form. But the concept is, after this forced retirement, Bruce Wayne is what's the word to describe? Not anxious, but he's unable to find peace in his life. He's friends with Jim Gordon. Jim Gordon now knows who he is and what he did. And basically we have this wonderful cocktail scene at the beginning where they're talking with each other and having drinks and talking about what they used to do. Jim Gordon is at the point of retirement. And frankly, Wayne feels that with the rise of this gang called the Mutants, it is time for Batman to come back.
And he's not sure of his own abilities at this point. And you know,
he's an old man.
He's an old man. And a lot of people will, you know, in The Dark Knight Rises, the film, they take a lot of elements from this book. One of which is, you know, the major one is Batman having been away for almost a decade and, you know, and wanting to, when he comes back into the world. Now, it's not so much of a stretch that Christian Bale could come back into that world. Because
he wasn't that old.
He wasn't that old. We're talking about an old Batman. He's got gray hair and a mustache.
Well, they're saying he's like 60-something. And when you consider the hard life that he's had and the amount of abuse that his body has been through.
And when he does come back, he says, there's no reason I should be moving now, let alone, you know, fighting. But he says, you know, that his renewed passion has given him, he says, the body of a 30, even 20-year-old man to go back and do this. Now, a lot of things are happening at the same time. Harvey Dent has been ostensibly rehabilitated.
He's with reconstructive surgery.
So he's now like a Two-Face.
This weirdo psychiatrist, Dr. Wolper, who basically is saying that Batman is the root cause of all problems and these villains are actually not that bad.
That's a theme throughout.
Yeah, it goes throughout the whole thing, and he tries to do it again, of course, with Joker by the third book,
which backfires.
Yeah, it backfires just a little bit. Joker is basically catatonic and has lost touch with the world. The new threat is in the first two books is this group called the Mutants, where the leader actually is kind of a mutant. I mean, he's got sharp teeth and all this stuff, but the rest of them are just street kids who are following this
I love this. They're following anything, because when ultimately in this book, when Batman takes down the mutant threat, which happens in the first two books of this, the mutants start following Batman.
They take off their visors and paint bats on their face.
And then later in the book, when the Joker returns, there's all these Joker acolytes as well.
Oh, and there's Nixon gang at one point. They're wearing Nixon masks. You know? It's like they'll follow anything because everybody is just lost.
Yeah.
But so with our first two books, and now... One of the things that kind of brought us back to this as well is the fact that they have just finished the film adaptation.
Yes, of the first series.
We've had Dark Knight Returns Part 1 at this point. In fact, we'll be ending the show this week with some of the music from that that telemovie that was made, and it's brilliant. It is. It is. In fact, in many ways, I think Richard would agree with me when we say that it is actually better than The Dark Knight Rises.
Oh yeah,
as a film. I mean, it's just an amazing film with Peter Weller doing the voice of Bruce Wayne, Batman, he's just awesome. I mean, and it is such a faithful adaptation of the first two books. But let me tell you, if you've watched that film and you haven't read the books, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Oh yeah.
Second half, this last two, because it's four issues, and these are big issues. We're not talking about like some little four-issue miniseries. Each issue is 50-something pages.
Oh, yeah.
So it's 200-and-something pages all up. It's a big book, and it's dense, too. He doesn't stick with the normal panel format of a normal comic book. We're fitting like 12 panels a page in some cases.
Like, I mean, in this, it's exactly that. It's maybe 16 panels a page.
Yeah, so it's a really dense read. And it's very introspective. The one thing that the movie has cut away, which one great reason to read the book, is that it doesn't have the Batman narration. All the way through the book, Batman is narrating basically everything that's going on and these deep introspective thoughts about everything that's going on. That's missing from the film.
Yeah, and Miller's layout was very influential as well, all those little densely packed panels and things, and his use of media throughout this, like using television reports and things like that. That was something that was seen in other books of the decade, including Watchmen, used a very similar...
Oh, and V for Vendetta.
And V for Vendetta used that kind of motif as well. And it was very much, you know... The '80s. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, that was the media in those days. It's pre-internet. You know, most people.
And I love the fact that the media is even made fun of in this, even way back then. At the one point where they're trying to, and this is jumping ahead a little bit, but they're trying to report on the fact that a nuclear missile is coming in. Mm. This is imminent news.
Yeah.
And at one point, the reporter goes, "Actually, we finished with that story. We're moving on to the celebrity news now." It's like they're going, "What?"
It's great. No, there's lots of little satirical comments throughout this. But the main story, as you said, halfway through this book, in the first two books, which are the first two prestige format books, now collected as a massive... which is the ideal way to read this. Of course, you can read them on Comixology.
Well, Comixology 2 weeks ago had a special where they actually put out The Dark Knight Returns and its sequel, Dark Knight Strikes Back, 99 cents an issue.
Which is wonderful.
Which was brilliant. I picked it up. I bought it in that format. I also have it in print. It's sitting right in front of me. But once again, as we said, collecting in print and reading digital is an ideal format. And let me tell you, the Comixology app for this particular book works so well because the panels are so small that that feed view...
It works really well. I've looked at the Comixology version. There is also a nice, big, oversized Absolute Edition.
I'd love to see that.
Which has both Returns and Strikes Back, which is the...
Strikes Again in a minute because Strikes Again... by the time you get to the end of this book, there's some issues.
So. Now, look, you know, this book becomes a completely different story almost at the end of book two and the introduction of book three when the Joker comes back in the scene pretty much triggered by the return of Batman. He comes out of his catatonic state sort of reinforcing that idea that Batman creates the villains that he fights in a lot of ways. And which I think is a theme that ran all throughout the Christopher Nolan Batman trilogy.
Yep.
It's something they introduced at the very end of Batman Begins even. When he says,
says it's copycats.
He said escalation started. Like this guy, for example, the Joker. And they obviously, it's something they really play on with the Heath Ledger Joker as well. And Heath Ledger, you know, his Joker makes a lot of references to the fact that they need each other, you know. And it's something that we saw in other recent depictions as well. I think some of Kevin Smith's stuff uses that depiction as well. But that strikes like it. So you've got the Joker coming back in with his own plot to... mayhem.
And he
as
doesn't
well.
Even seem to even have a plan this time around. It's just destruction.
And this is interesting because the second two books actually become incredibly chaotic.
Yeah.
You know, there is a very definite line through for those first two books where it's, Batman coming back from the dead effectively to Gotham to... And you've even got that great scene that's used in both Dark Knight Rises, the film, and the adaptation Dark Knight Returns, with the two young, the older cop and the younger cop. You're going to be in for a hell of a show tonight, kid. You know, that's a scene that comes from this book. You know, you've got that very straight line through to Batman coming back. Kelly, what's her name again? The kid?
Kelly.
Yeah, Carrie Kelly, sorry.
Carrie Kelly.
A 13-year-old girl.
Just Kelly Clarkson. That's not,
that's Kelly Clarkson comes back, records a single. Carrie Kelly comes back, is introduced in this run as the new Robin, effectively, because she's inspired.
Well, she makes herself Robin, the new Robin. Yeah.
And Batman's kind of like, okay.
Yeah, whatever. Follow me. I like little kids.
Pretty quickly, actually. Come back to my cave, little girl. I'll introduce you to my butler. And Alfred's like, not again. Seriously, Master Wade. That's why he went into hiding for 10 years. but she comes back. So he's got this new...
It was that going door to door.
He's got this...
I'm entering Batman.
He's got this new force back in there. So he's fighting this. And that line through is very distinct in those first two books. But once the Joker comes back into it, appropriately enough, it's very chaotic.
Yes.
And so you've got these things happening with the Joker. You've got this... and because of the escalation, the government's interested again.
Well, because the Joker goes all out this time. It's not like... a person here, a person there. I mean, he goes on to what is a thinly veiled David Letterman show.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And kills everybody in the audience on national television. Yeah. You know? And so, and he keeps doing it. And then he goes off to a theme park and he's wiping out the theme park.
Using cotton candy.
Yeah.
And actually, Selina Kyle, a Catwoman, who is back. And she's pretty much middle-aged.
Well, she's running a brothel.
Broken down. Yeah, yeah, madam at this point, you know, with big pink hair and, you know, I can kind of imagine her talking like this, sweetheart. You know, she's back and she's actually saying he's changed. He's not the same as he used to be. And so you've got that story. Meanwhile, because of this escalation, because of all this happening, it's caught the attention of the government who, as was implied earlier in the book, cracked down on superheroes at one point or costume vigilantes at one point. Except for Superman, who kind of works with them. And they've sent Superman after Batman, basically, to bring him down.
Well, first of all, Superman is busy. They keep cutting back to him. He's busy off closing down an insurgence in another country.
Yes.
So basically acting as a deterrent.
The nuclear warhead you mentioned
before. The nuclear warhead coming in. And I love the fact that there's a point where we get to a point at the theme park where, and we do say spoilers and all for this show, where Batman, as far as the world is concerned, kills Joker. And Batman doesn't kill. That's part of his modus operandi, basically. But he breaks Joker's neck. And Joker, in a staggering scene, basically says, "You didn't have the guts to go all the way," and turns his head and breaks the rest of his own neck.
Yeah.
Which is a staggering moment where basically Joker kills himself by breaking his own neck.
Yeah.
But everybody else sees it as Batman killing Joker.
Yeah, yeah.
And Batman has to escape by taking out police officers and so forth. And there's that one panel, which is Superman's voiceover, which just says, "You've done it now, Bruce."
Yeah.
You know, and that was it. That was the moment, you know?
And it's funny, though, because there's been irony there, because the nuclear strike actually explodes off the coast and sort of America's plunged into this kind of nuclear winter conditions. And the irony is that Gotham becomes the safest place in America at that point as an act of embarrassment. That's when Superman is sent in to take him down as well. And interestingly enough, another old friend turns up around this time as well, which is Green Arrow, Oliver Queen. Now, interestingly enough, he's only got one arm. Now, this predates the death of Green Arrow, his original death. And interestingly enough, and they allude to it, and I think when they did this, they were consciously recalling this book. Later on in Green Arrow continuity, there is a scene where Green Arrow has his arm holding onto a bomb, and he has and Superman's there, and he has the choice of losing his arm and going down and losing his arm and the plane exploding, right, or what have you, or going down with a ship, and Oliver Queen chooses to go down with the plane. Superman can't do anything about it, but obviously in this version of the continuity, They don't go that far into this, because this was written.
Well, he's only
This was written a good 10 years before that happened.
And what's interesting is the Oliver Queen scenes up until the finale when he comes back again, it's only like 4 panels.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
really brief.
And they mention this thing, and from this they've obviously extrapolated this later Green Arrow story. So I like to think there's a connection between the two there, and it's kind of like, you know, a what if? It's an alternate universe version of what would happen there. But he comes back, and he's used in the fight. For that, where Bruce Wayne, being, you know, not only the world's greatest detective, but super genius scientific mind and all these sorts of things, has synthesized kryptonite for what has to be one of the best superhero slugfests.
Oh, it's fantastic, because basically Superman had to stop this super nuclear missile. And when we talk about super nuclear missile, it literally plunges everything into darkness, because the electromagnetic wave is so intense, it literally has taken up power on the planet by the looks of it.
It's just
amazing. And it's plunged everything into this nuclear winter, and everything's dark. And so basically looting has started. Everything's gone just, excuse my language, but everything's gone batshit crazy at this point. You know what I mean? And so what we have now is Superman, who basically is in a weakened state, because he's lost contact with the sun, and with this explosion, now comes to a point where he basically, I love it, with his heat vision, writes into the ground where.
Yeah.
And basically saying to Batman, "We're going to finally do this, when and where," basically. And I love the fact Bruce Wayne just looks up to the sky and says, whatever alley it is, what's the alley called?
It's Crime Alley.
Where he just looks up at the end and says, "Crime Alley." So, you know, because he knows that Clark can hear him, you know? And we get to this slugfest that you're talking about, where basically they are going to, one or both of them are going to die this night, basically.
And in the, I mean, it's a huge slugfest, and obviously aided by the synthetic kryptonite, but Bruce Wayne's also quite weakened, seemingly, at this point. He's had a near fatal heart failure as a result of one of his previous fight, and he seems to die in this fight, and he's buried by the end of it. But he's clever because I love that scene too, because it's obviously he's faked his own death, and he says my timing was all off. Something to those effects, because his heart starts to beat again. He's put himself into a thing. Yeah. And Clark hears that at the last minute and sort of smiles as he walks away. So I think the Batcave's destroyed as well.
Batcave and the manor. He blows the entire thing up. And Alfred has a stroke.
That's right. Yeah.
And so basically it's all gone. All the evidence that ever led to him being Batman, all the evidence of anything he knew, everything is destroyed.
Yeah.
Or is it?
Yeah. And then, you know, we get this little final coda in the book where it's Bruce Wayne out of costume in a cave with a bunch of kids.
Well, it's being killed with a bunch of kids. Oh, dear. Anyway.
And you got Green Arrow standing in the wings and stuff, and he's got Robin there as well, basically saying, right, we're going to build an army and take this thing back.
Yeah.
And this is how it starts.
And he says, and we have all the time in the world.
You know? And that kind of leads into where Strikes Again comes in, but... It brings this story to an end, but that Strikes Again didn't happen until 2001.
And I just kind of
so
feel
that's
like
15 years later.
I have no interest in Strikes Again. This is such a complete book. It's such a complete story that you just sit there and go, I don't need this to go on.
I'd been away from comics for a few years just prior to Strikes Again coming out. And I remember when it was released in 2001, and I'd been collecting comics again for about a year at that stage. Thanks in part to Kevin Smith's Green Arrow run as well, which had just come out. And it was huge thing. And it was like, you know, when Alan Moore did his second League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, it was that kind of thing. And then we kind of started reading it and thought, oh, it's not quite as good as it was. And all the pieces were there. It looked the same. It sort of had the same feel, but it just wasn't, you know, Frank Miller in those 15 years in between was not batting at the top of his game anymore.
Ghostbusters 2 versus Ghostbusters, isn't it?
Well,
it's like
maybe,
you sit there and go, we've got all the same ingredients.
This is something that I would dare say that Ghostbusters 2 works better than Strikes Again. because there's still a lot of laughs to be had in Ghostbusters 2. You won't hate the buzzing of flies, Tim. but that's what it needed. It needed Peter McNichol.
Yes, and Peter McNichol in Strikes Again, you reckon?
Yes, I reckon that would have done it for me, yeah. When they do the adaptation... Peter McNichol should play someone. It's not quite as good, but because this ends on such a strong note, where your mind can take you wherever you want it to go.
Well, and the thing is, he's not the Dark Knight anymore. He's not.
No.
At that conclusion in the cave, he's got all the sons of the Batman there. He's forming his army. He's rebuilding this empire, but he's not going out again.
Yeah, and that's the thing. You know, Gotham doesn't need Batman anymore.
No.
You know, Gotham and he doesn't need Batman anymore. It's a whole motif that did run through Christopher Nolan's trilogy.
Yeah.
And you can see where he's taken that from this. And certainly the slightly ambiguous ending of Dark Knight Rises sort of borrows from this as well, but not directly. That's certainly one of the points where it departs. It's a magnificent story. It's incredibly well written and well plotted and well paced. Reading it again now, I have a few issues with it. I know it's tough to say that for a book that is so revered, but I think it's very much of its time.
It is definitely a time capsule of the 80s.
Which is not a problem at all, because I still think that reads well. But it's a little indulgent sometimes, and I do think it loses some of the pacing issues present themselves in the third and fourth issues. I think that there is a little bit of... cause to me, the first two books... almost perfect story in and of themselves.
I agree with you, and I think that that's actually a really, really important point, the fact that this is two halves of a whole story, and the first half is... It's like a little bit like Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings films.
You
think Fellowship of the Ring is so strong as a film.
Just and as almost as self-contained.
As a self-contained film. The Two Towers fights a long way to try and...
The Two Towers in that case, and we won't get into this too much, but in that case they had... so much that they couldn't include because they needed to make up a third film
right.
and all that sort of stuff, and they didn't know where to end it.
It's a little bit like that, though,
which worries me about the Hobbit trilogy.
Yeah, exactly. But it's a little bit like this. We sit there and go, the first half is so solid And it has a conclusion. I mean, it literally is a self-contained story that the second half is, as you, I think your words were perfect when you said, it's messy. It's incredibly chaotic.
And, you know, I hate to, I mean, look, this is, you know, always ranks up there in, you know, IGN did a ranking of the best Batman graphic novels of all time. Mm-hmm. This was number two, coming only to another Frank Miller book, which was Year One.
Which I think Year One is a more solid book.
It's a smaller and it's a perfect little book.
Enough. Actually, personal preference, I think Dark Knight Returns is essential reading. I think Dark Knight Returns is in many ways, it is a masterpiece of a complete book.
Mm.
But I have more pleasure in Year One.
Because I think I prefer the Batman at the start of his career. Look, this is unquestionably, I'm placing my hand on the Bible of Dark Knight Returns as I say this. This is unquestionably a masterpiece, as you say, and it's not. We're never going to debate that.
No,
and I don't think we'd ever win in the document.
We're nitpicking.
Yeah, and I think you can nitpick with these things after many years gone by. I don't think any comics beyond reproach, even Watchmen, has issues with it. Mm. You know, that you could say that's a little indulgent or long or whatever. You know, and it's. I'm not going to get into those now because I can't think of any off the top of my head. But
also, you might, you know, anger at the madman in the mountains, and
that's
might,
true. Kind of but charging down the hill, Shuffler could say, "Well, look, you brought my name into vain when you were talking about
and Watchmen, Frank the Miller, greatest comic ever written."
You know, I don't think there's any question. I mean, look, you know, before Watchmen, almost as good. No, it's not.
Oh God, don't go there.
Yeah, before Watchmen is The Dark Knight Strikes Again. But look, you know, so influential as well. I mean, as we said, it's basically spawned, you know, a couple of decades worth of Batman books.
Batman that we know today owes everything to this book.
You know, and certainly the films that have come out recently owe a lot to this book.
Even Tim Burton's Batman in '89. Was spawned from this era.
It was at the point where Batman, I remember the original EPKs that were out about Batman in 1988, 89, that were playing on the television talking about how much darker Batman was these days in the comics. And it was because of this.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because of this and The Killing Joke, really, which came out in 88.
Hmm.
And between those two books, Batman was never the same again.
No.
And thankfully.
Yeah.
You can argue there were better artists, you can argue there were better stories over the years, and, you know, there probably were, but at the end of the day, as a complete package, this is the shiz as far as Batman's concerned. You can't, you know, all we're doing is nitpicking.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't even have to recommend this highly, because most of you will hopefully have this in your collection.
Most people have read this already. Anybody who's a serious comic book reader has probably read this. This is really for those who haven't read it, or have read it a long time ago.
Yeah, it had been a while since I'd read it, so revisiting it again, it's the only reason I have nitpicks, because, you know, having...
Look, it's been so long since I've read it, it was like reading it for the first time.
Mm.
The first half was a lot clearer in my memory than the second half was.
And I think because I've reread the first half a lot more, and I've probably never gotten past the third issue in a lot of rereadings.
Because, once again, the third act gets really messy, or the second act gets really messy, and you start to get to a point where you go, I think I need to take a break now. And then you don't come back. Because you've taken a break because it's gotten all messy on you. You know?
But I think, you know, again, we're reading it in a complete format. It would have been released, you know, a month apart each time. Look, but highly recommended. Go out and get it. That's all we really need to say about it.
Buy it today.
Now, next month.
Now, let's before you actually say what's next month, let's talk about this really quickly.
Oh, yes.
So, next month will be, once again, we're a monthly show at the moment because of this hiatus it's taking on, but we're pushing on with the panels, but in this monthly format. Now, however, this is going to change. So, our next episode after this one will actually be first week of December. That's a month. Okay, so that's 4 weeks. But then we actually go bi-weekly.
Yep.
So from that point onwards, we're actually bringing panels into a bi-weekly format, which means it'll actually come out every 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
I have to say that because sometimes people go, bi-weekly, does that mean twice a week or every 2 weeks? So every 2 weeks, and we will have a Christmas show.
We will have a Christmas show. So our next show at the start of December will be Why the Last Man.
Which is a big read. Get reading now.
Get reading. It's 60 issues, all available in collections, trades, and individual issues. I'm pretty sure it's on Comixology as well. Go out and get it. Magnificent read. We'll be talking about it in full next month. Also, our Christmas special.
This is a little gem you seem to have come up with.
Look, I was looking actually for Christmas stuff for our special this year because we're going to actually do it. We did last year. We did
Noel.
Batman Noel.
Yeah.
This year I was looking for any other Christmas graphic novels, and I thought there was a couple that we could have done. There was Father Christmas by Raymond Briggs because we mentioned him when we did the When the Wind Blows thing.
Yeah.
But instead, I found The Last Christmas, which I think is an Image book. Yeah, it's an Image comic by Brian Posehn and Jerry Duggan. And Rick Remender is the illustrator. Basically, it's Santa versus zombies.
And I thought, Richard, you're a genius.
Yeah.
And we have to do this. So.
And it's look, I mean, we've got it here now, here in front of us, and it looks awesome. And we're going to cover this in full. Actually, I had a look. It is available in trade paperback. It doesn't seem to be on Comixology at the moment.
It's a real pain, but anyway.
Yeah, but we've got the collection here. And that will be covered just, I suppose, 2 weeks after the next day. So about mid-December,
which it won't be at Christmas time because, of course, we'll all be celebrating Christmas. So, but it will be just.
And have I got a present for you this year, David? Let me tell you.
And we will be doing it just before Christmas so that you'll have something to listen to on Christmas Eve.
And on that note,
I think that's about it. The other thing we should mention very quickly is that we have been invited by Apple.
Yes.
Apple does events in store. And
I'm not sure if you're aware of Apple. They're a company.
And they do computers and things.
Yeah.
And computers and stuff. But they also do, in their retail stores, they have events. They do concerts and they do like workshop events and so forth. We have been asked to do something on podcasting.
We have. So I don't know why they asked us.
Who knows? Anyway, but they want us to talk about basically why we do it, what we do, what, you know, the Apple, I guess the Apple connection is, you know, because we use Apple computers to record our podcast and, you know, how we do it. And it's like kind of like an open workshop. And there actually may be an opportunity to do two of these, two different stores. They're quite keen on it. We'll be looking at this point, looking like we're going to do it in February, which will be perfect for the relaunch of the network and all this stuff. And so we just want to get everybody on board so that you are making sure that you're going to get to the Apple store. We want to see you all there because we're going to use it as an opportunity for a meetup as well.
Yeah,
so.
We want to see your faces because, like, I mean, David's met a few of you along over the years. I've been doing this for over a year now. I don't think I've met many of you, so it'd be great to get out there.
So it'd be fantastic. We'll get out there. We'll talk a little bit about the shows and how we do it, and afterwards, of course, we'll get to meet you guys. So please come along, and we'll give you much more details as coming. But just be aware, in February, there will be an event where we will be sitting in the back of an Apple store, basically, talking about why we podcast.
Hey, look, I'm really looking forward to that. I mean, in the meantime, check out our site, check out this podcast for more details.
Yep, absolutely. And then the big relaunch will be coming up soon. GeekActually.com is currently the place where you find everything. But that may be changing over the next couple of months because everything's going to be getting their own websites.
Yes.
There's a lot of things happening. Our big relaunch, of course, is in January with the new film show, a new geek show, this show continuing on.
And maybe a few other surprises.
And a couple of new surprises along the way. Or it is in the old Star Wars Special Edition trailers and a few new surprises. So there'll be a few new things showing up. It's going to be an exciting year coming up in 2013.
So David, what was the name of that site where we can find you?
GeekActually.com would be where you would find everything to do with us. You can also find me on Twitter at David McVeigh. Richard!
You can find me at TheRealBits.com. That's TheRELBits.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic.
All of it, my original work.
And I've got waving him on. You weren't in this show. Anyway, YouTube.com/Nicky McVeigh. Find his a lot of superhero-based Lego animations.
All
well worth having a look at. Now, very quickly as well, just a quick shout-out. If you go to YouTube, look up The Uncanny Valley. It is a web show. Alexis, who is a friend of mine, who was guested on a couple of film actuallys. This is his show. And I guested on his show, his most recent episode, and Nicholas did an animation for it as well. Go check it out. It's a lot of fun. It's all about zombies. So if you like zombies, go check out his latest episode. That's it. I think
excellent.
We're done.
There's only one other comment I'd like to make, and it's
I am Groot!
Awesome. That is awesome. You kept that hidden from
I did.
Me. We're going to go out with a little bit of music from the Dark Knight Returns cartoon that has been released on Blu-ray, DVD in the last few weeks. Well worth going out and picking up as well. This is kind of going to tie this whole thing up. The movie is sensational. Check it out. I'm David. This is Richard.
And I'm wearing my baggies.
And we're wearing our baggies. And we're going to see you all next month. Bye, everyone.
Bye, folks.